media on those platforms, and Jane is going to continue to do her show from 10 o'clock onward. You can also get some updates on national news as well. For the broadcast network and other streams, we are going to carry this special report for you live. Again, awaiting presidential remarks from President Joe Biden. We've been, of course, with you the last couple of days from our election headquarters here, Wisconsin Decides 2024. As the Electoral College stands now, and of course in America, that's how we choose a president. Interesting to note, though, that Donald Trump not only has won the Electoral College decisively, he also won the popular vote. But a lot of talk in recent elections about should we elect a president via Electoral College or should we elect them through popular vote. In this election in 2024, it would not have mattered, as Donald Trump won both the popular vote and the Electoral College. As it stands right now, with two states to be called, Nevada and Arizona are the two states where they are continuing to count ballots. Right now, Donald Trump has 295 electoral votes to Kamala Harris's 226. And of course, it takes 270 to win, as they say. Ironically, or maybe not so ironically, just like in 2016, it was the state of Wisconsin, our own Badger state, that was called early yesterday morning, which put Trump over that 270 electoral vote mark. And of course, it was Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, all three so-called blue wall states that were flipped from Trump to Biden in 20, were flipped again a couple of days ago from Biden to back to Trump in Trump's column. Again, yesterday, we heard from the Vice President, Kamala Harris, from Washington, D.C. She spoke there, and she gave her thoughts on the transition and peaceful transition of power. The great Sam Davidson, our producer here for this segment, I believe we have those clips for you. So here is the Vice President, Kamala Harris, yesterday on this transition.
Now, I know folks are feeling and experiencing a range of emotions right now. I get it. But we must accept the results of this election. Earlier today, I spoke with President-elect Trump and congratulated him on his victory. I also told him that we will help him and his team with their transition, and that we will engage in a peaceful transfer of power. A fundamental principle of American democracy is that when we lose an election, we accept the results. That principle, as much as any other, distinguishes democracy from monarchy or tyranny. And anyone who seeks the public trust must honor it. At the same time, in our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign. The fight for freedom, for opportunity, for fairness, and the dignity of all people. A fight for the ideals at the heart of our nation, the ideals that reflect America at our best. That is a fight I will never give up.
Vice President Kamala Harris yesterday from Howard University in Washington, D.C., on her first remarks there after losing the election to Donald Trump. Again, Harris currently has 226 electoral votes to Donald Trump's 295, with Nevada and Arizona still yet to be counted. We are awaiting the remarks of current President Joe Biden from the White House, from the Rose Garden. He is expected to come out at any moment and address the nation on the results of the election. Possibly on the words of the vice president yesterday, and also on the transition. For those, again, awaiting Jane Matinera. Matinera on air. You can find her on all of the streaming platforms on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, which is now X, at Civic Media's pages there. We will give you the president's comments live here in just a few moments. I think it's important to remember that what is transpiring or transpired yesterday with Vice President Harris there, and also what is about to transpire today with President Biden, is something that was not afforded to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris 4 years ago. Donald Trump, of course, refused to accept those election results in 2020. In fact, to this day, he continues to deny the truth of 2020. And he did not invite Joe Biden to come to the White House. He did not call and concede the election. He certainly didn't have a press conference saying that he would work on the transition. In fact, as recently as last week, he said, declared at one of his rallies that he was sorry that he did not leave the White House, or that rather that he is sorry that he left the White House after the election of 2020. Juxtapose that to what has happened this week. Vice President Harris has accepted the election results. She has called Donald Trump. She has conceded. She has wished him well. And yesterday there was another phone call from current President Biden to Trump, congratulating him, accepting the election results, inviting him back to the White House before he is sworn in, and said that the, both Harris and Biden, that they will work with President-elect Trump on the transition. And as much as that may anger some folks in terms of not wanting to kind of in their heart accept these results, it's important for democracy there, as the vice president just said. We're going to play one more remark. If you haven't, stay up there. I think you're ready. And we're going to play one more of Vice President Harris's remarks. If we see Sam's doing a great job, if we see President Biden coming to the dais, we will cut into that and go right to the current president. But here is Vice President Harris yesterday in her remarks at Howard University.
The outcome of this election is not what we wanted, not what we fought for, not what we voted for. But hear me when I say, the light of America's promise will always burn bright. As long as we never give up, and as long as we keep fighting.
Vice President Harris yesterday at her remarks at Howard University in Washington, D.C., after conceding the election to Donald Trump. Again, important for democracy. I think it was nuanced. It was a great speech, in my opinion, by the vice president to say, look, I'm accepting the results of this election, but I'm not conceding the principles on which we ran. Important difference there, I should say. Important to her supporters, people who voted for her, important to those who disagree with Donald Trump as well. And Sam, I just sent you a cut there of Trump. We'll take it, whatever. You let me know when you're ready to go with that one, because we're going to juxtapose what Harris said yesterday with what former President Donald Trump said on the night of the election when he went to the microphone. This is Donald Trump on election night.
We're going to have a great 4 years, and we're going to turn our country around, make it something very special. It lost that little thing called special. We have to make it so. We're going to make this so great. It's the greatest country, and potentially the greatest country in the world by far. And right now, we're going to just work very hard to get all of that back.
Donald Trump on election night, a more subdued Donald Trump, I will say, than the last few days of the campaign trail, where he broke out some of the most hateful, hurtful, dark rhetoric of the election cycle. And by reports of people who were in the room when Harris called Trump to congratulate him and accept the election results yesterday, apparently, according to reports of those who were in the room, Trump was actually kind, deferential, calling Harris a worthy opponent. We'll see. I hope for the good of the country anyway, that Trump will be good to his word. We'll talk more about that on our show coming up from noon until 2 today. Again, if you're tuning in expecting to hear Jane Matinere and Greg Bach of Matinere on air, you can still hear them. They are streaming their show as per usual on Facebook, Twitter, which is now X, YouTube. You go to the Civic Media channels for that. Also go to civicmedia.us, civicmedia.us, and find those show that Matinere on air streaming right now. And we will rejoin Matinere on air across the broadcast network here across Wisconsin as soon as we hear from President Joe Biden, who we anticipate will be coming to the dais soon. Actually, it's in a way, it's a little bit humorous to me, a little bit entertaining. Joe Biden, not always known for being on time, especially on the campaign trail. You know, we get these press announcements saying, oh, you know, he's going to speak at 5 o'clock, 6:35. Here he comes. He's not somebody that necessarily looks at the clock and says, I'm going to stick to that. He's somebody who lives in the moment. He's going to talk to people. So in this, one of his final addresses, we'll see. We expect, usually what happens is a precedent, and again, this is something, precedent was broken in the Trump era. Normally a president, an outgoing president, will give a final address to the nation a week or two before the transition of power on January 20th. That did not happen in 2020. Donald Trump never gave an address to the nation on the way out, never wished incoming president-elect then Joe Biden well, because he kept denying the election, denying the election results. And so it's refreshing to see this return to transfer normal transfer of power, at least on the Biden and Harris end. And Donald Trump, of course, he's, you know, in a good mood, right? He won. So far, in the first couple of days here, after this presidential election, we have normalcy returning to the transition of power. There are reports this morning that Trump has already begun his transition team, and that may be anything but normal. Again, Robert Kennedy Jr., who apparently, by all accounts, is well on his way to becoming Secretary of Health and Human Services, is already talking about eliminating fluoride in our water system, returning kids back to cavities, already talking about getting rid of vaccines, already talking about eliminating departments in the U.S. Department of the Food and Drug Administration. And of course, these were all parts of Project 2025. Which the Trump administration vehemently, or the Trump campaign team, vehemently denied they had any knowledge of. Denied that they had any part of. And here already, 2 days after the election, the Trump transition team apparently already implementing parts of Project 2025. We are awaiting the words of President Joe Biden on the election and on the transition, live from the White House at the Rose Garden. We have our cameras, our audio ready, trained on the podium there in the Rose Garden. As soon as he comes to the dais, we will bring you these comments and these words to you. And again, Jane Matinere, Matinere on Air, streaming live on all the platforms of Civic Media, YouTube, Twitter, which is now X, Facebook. You can hear Jane right now live on that show. We will return to Matinere on Air across the broadcast network here at Civic Media as soon as President Biden's comments wrap up. While we're waiting, let's take a look back at some of these election results for you from our election desk, Wisconsin Decides 2024. Again, nationally right now, the Electoral College stands at 295 for Donald Trump and 226 for Vice President Kamala Harris. Two states remain right now to be count or two remain to be projected winners. Nevada, with its 6 electoral counts, 92% of the votes are counted last time we checked. And Donald Trump is leading 51% to Harris's 47%. If you zoom in and look, Las Vegas, of course, has the largest vote totals. 94% of votes are in Las Vegas County, where Las Vegas is. Pardon me, Clark County, where Las Vegas is. And Harris leads Trump 50 to 48% with 94% of the votes counted. Again, to this observer at least, slightly surprising. There is a large number of Latinos who work in the Las Vegas economy. And it was thought by many that after the Madison Square Garden rally in New York, week before the election, a lot of anti-Latino rhetoric, hateful rhetoric towards Latinos. And it was thought that many Latinos would swing towards Vice President Harris. Turned out from exit poll data so far that Trump actually gained in Latino voters versus 2020. And in Las Vegas, while Harris leads right now 50 to 48%, that is not an overwhelming lead. All other counties, by the way, in Las Vegas, Trump is ahead. And not by a small margin. So it would appear, keyword appear, that Las Vegas, or pardon me, that Nevada could very well go into the Trump column once it is declared. Let's move down to Arizona. Again, we are awaiting word right now, or awaiting the comments of President Joe Biden from the Rose Garden. He is expected to talk about the election results and about the transition. We're going to bring that to you live, and we're going to rejoin Jay and Matt Nair. Matt Nair on air as soon as we are done with these comments from Joe Biden. You can hear Jane right now along with Greg Bach on all of our streaming platforms. Go to Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, which is now X, YouTube, or go to civicmedia.us to hear Jane and Greg of Matt Nair on air right now. We will rejoin that program as soon as we hear from President Biden. Continuing to look at our Wisconsin Decides 2024 election desk results, the two states that have yet to be counted nationally for president, Nevada and Arizona. Let's look at Arizona. The one big place, the one county that President Harris is winning there is Pima County, which is where Tucson is at. Vice President leads 58 to 41%. Big win or big lead there. Only 66% of the votes, though, are in Pima County. She's expected, though, to continue to win there. Let's look at the other big county, Maricopa County, where Phoenix is at. Was thought the vice president had to do well, at least be competitive there. She's competitive. Trump leads 51 to 48%, 73% of the votes in there in Maricopa County. Of course, Gallego ended up beating Carrie Lake for the U.S. Senate seat in Arizona. Gallego, the Democrat. But there seems to be a lot of split ticket voting. We talked about this on many of our shows, many of our platforms here in Civic Media. One of them by former boss Scott Klug on Lost in the Middle. You can hear it every Saturday afternoon. Talked about states and areas where you have these ticket splitters. We saw it in Wisconsin a couple of years ago when Tony Evers was up for election for governor, a Democrat, and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson was up for election as a Republican. Evers and Johnson both won. So you have these ticket splitters. And then where do those folks go that split their tickets in larger elections? In Wisconsin, although many we have to wait to see the final tabulations, what we see thus far in Wisconsin is many of those Evers-Johnson ticket splitters ended up being Trump-Baldwin ticket splitters in this election. What's going to happen in Arizona, in Phoenix? We shall see. But right now, as we said, Donald Trump is leading the vote in Arizona. We'll have to see whether all that falls out in the end. Right now, 71% of the votes on total to Arizona, 92% of the votes on total in Nevada. You would expect at this point, most likely Trump will win Nevada. We'll see what happens in Arizona. We are awaiting the word of President Joe Biden. From the Rose Garden at the White House, he is expected to address the nation shortly. President Biden's definition of shortly is very odd. We'll see. He'll be here soon. He's putting on the shades, putting on the aviators, having an ice cream cone, and we'll be at the dais soon. Going to speak on the election, going to speak on the transition of power. We are awaiting word of the president at this hour. And again, very significant. Why? Because this was not something that was afforded to President Biden and then Vice President-elect Harris 4 years ago. Trump refused to accept the election results. He refused to congratulate President Biden, or then President-elect Biden. He refused to invite Biden to the White House. He refused to participate in any sort of a transition. And here now, as recently as yesterday, the day after the election, both President Biden and Vice President Harris called now President-elect Donald Trump to congratulate him, to say they will work with the president-elect in helping him transition back into the White House. That's normalcy returning. What I think a lot of folks are concerned about is, unlike the last time he got into the White House in 2016, this time Trump knows what he's doing to a certain degree. And this time, by all reports, instead of bringing people in who have had experience in federal government to some degree, who knows how things operate normally, Trump is following through, if you believe reports, and so far we believe them. He's bringing people in like Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr., who by all accounts is going to be Secretary of Health and Human Services and has already said yesterday he wants to eliminate fluoride in our water, wants to close down departments in the Food and Drug Administration. Other members of the transition team include Don Jr., the president's eldest son, and Eric, younger son of the president, president-elect. For some people, that's a big concern. For some people, having this larger so-called shakeup of the federal government is of great concern about what is yet to come. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the Trump transition team continues to take pages out of Project 2025, which was written by the Heritage Foundation and also by former members of Trump's own staff. The Trump campaign and Trump himself denied that he was going to use the Project 2025 document to transition and to build his second administration, should he get one. And now here we are. He has gotten a second administration. Again, important to note, Donald Trump did not just win the Electoral College. So far, 295 electoral votes. We expect that to exceed 300 by the time it's all said and done. But very important to remember that Donald Trump thus far has received 72 million plus votes, 50.9% of the total vote so far, to Kamala Harris's 68 million plus, 47% of the total electorate. Donald Trump has won the popular vote, and Donald Trump has won the Electoral College vote. And there are certain conversations, I'll call them, on different social media platforms of some Democrats calling foul because there appears, again, these numbers and statistics are still being tabulated. We have to be careful until everything is done and over. It would appear that there were about 15 to 20 million Democratic voters who either stayed home, didn't vote, or voted third party. Some people on the Democratic side say that makes it quote-unquote fishy or suspicious. I am not one of those people. I think it's going to be interesting as we move forward to see what was the cause of that. Are these folks who felt strongly about what's happening in Gaza and Palestine? Are these Jill Stein voters? Are these people who were just not satisfied still with having a choice between Harris and Trump? And these are Democratic voters. Why did they stay home? Why did they vote third party? We won't know. We'll never know exactly. We can only speculate if they had participated and voted for President Harris. She may well have won the blue wall of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, like Joe Biden did. And so now what's curious to me is those 15 to 20 million Democratic voters who stayed home or voted third party because they felt on a certain issue, The result is you have Donald Trump going to the White House. Speaking of, we're going to go to the White House now. In fact, President Biden is removing his aviators. He's coming to the dais dressed in a natty blue suit. Here is the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Please. Thank you. Good to see this cabinet and the staff together. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Please. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's good to see you all. Particularly good to see my granddaughter sitting in the front row here. Hi, Finn. How are you, honey? For over 200 years, America has carried on the greatest experiment in self-government in the history of the world. And that's not hyperbole. That's a fact. We're the people. The people vote and choose their own leaders, and they do it peacefully. And we're in a democracy. The will of the people always prevails. Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him that I'd direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition. That's what the American people deserve. Yesterday, I also spoke with Vice President Harris. She's been a partner and a public servant. She ran an inspiring campaign, and everyone got to see something that I learned early on to respect so much, her character. She has a backbone like a ramrod. She has great character, true character. She gave her whole heart and effort, and she and her entire team should be proud of the campaign they ran. You know, the struggle for the soul of America, since our very founding, has always been an ongoing debate and still vital today. I know for some people, it's a time for victory, to state the obvious. For others, it's a time of loss. Campaigns are contests of competing visions. The country chooses one or the other. We accept the choice the country made. I've said many times, you can't love your country only when you win. You can't love your neighbor only when you agree. Something I hope we can do, no matter who you voted for, is see each other not as adversaries, but as fellow Americans. Bring down the temperature. I also hope we can lay to rest the question about the integrity of the American electoral system. It is honest. It is fair, and it is transparent, and it can be trusted, win or lose. I also hope we can restore the respect for all our election workers who busted their necks and took risks at the outset. We should thank them. Thank them for staffing voting sites, counting the votes, and protecting the very integrity of the election. Many of them are volunteers who do it simply out of love for their country. And as they did their duty as citizens, I will do my duty as president. I'll fulfill my oath, and I will honor the Constitution. On January 20th, we'll have a peaceful transfer of power here in America. To all our incredible staff, supporters, cabinet members, all the people who have been hanging out with me for the last 4 years, God love you, as my mother would say, thank you so much. You put so much into the past 4 years. I know it's a difficult time. You're hurting. I hear you and I see you. But don't forget. Don't forget all that we accomplished. It's been a historic presidency. Not because I'm president, because what we've done, what you've done. A presidency for all Americans. Much of the work we've done is already being felt by the American people, but the vast majority of it will not be felt. We felt over the next 10 years. We have legislation we passed that's just only now just really kicking in. We're going to see over $1 trillion worth of infrastructure work done, changing people's lives in rural communities and communities that are in real difficulty because it takes time to get it done. And so much more, it's going to take time. But it's there. The road ahead is clear, assuming we sustain it. There's so much we can get done. and will get done based on the way the legislation was passed. And it's truly historic. You know, we're leaving behind the strongest economy in the world. I know people are still hurting, but things are changing rapidly. Together, we've changed America for the better. Now we have 74 days to finish the term, our term. Let's make every day count. That's the responsibility we have to the American people. Look, folks, you all know it in your lives. Setbacks are unavoidable, but giving up is unforgivable. Setbacks are unavoidable, but giving up is unforgivable. We all get knocked down. But the measure of our character, as my dad would say, is how quickly we get back up. Remember, a defeat does not mean we are defeated. We lost this battle. The America of your dreams is calling for you to get back up. That's the story of America for over 240 years and counting. It's a story for all of us, not just some of us. The American experiment endures. We're going to be okay, but we need to stay engaged. We need to keep going. And above all, we need to keep the faith. I'm so proud to have worked with all of you. I really mean it. I sincerely mean it. God bless you all. God bless America. And may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
President Joe Biden and the Rose Garden in the White House there in Washington, D.C. This is a Civic Media News special report. The president there. To recap just a couple of his remarks as he, as you watch him now, just going back into the White House, turning around, waving to people, has his aviators back in hand. Thanking his granddaughter in particular, his staff, his cabinet were all there in the Rose Garden. A couple of key lines from the president's remarks today saying, you can't love your country only when you win. Also says he wants to, that he hopes that this election and the acceptance of it by he and Vice President Harris, quote, lays to rest the questions of integrity in the American political process, an electoral process, pardon me. Thank the electoral workers all around the country. Saying, you know what, we have 70 some odd days left. Let's make every day count. And I thought perhaps his best line in those brief remarks was, quote, setbacks are inevitable, but giving up is unforgivable, unquote. And then the President of the United States reminding Americans that the American experiment endures. Much more on all of our shows here, Jane, Matt, and Air, which many of our stations are going to rejoin Matt and Air on air for our Madison station, WMDX. The Stephanie Miller Show continues. I will be with you across the network from noon until 2, and our other network talkers as well will be talking about these remarks. And stay tuned to Civic Media News. We'll cover all of this as well. For now, for Sam Davidson, for Corey Hartman, and our entire team here, I'm Todd Allball. This has been a Civic Media News special report.
Water in Haiti. We're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Can you guys hear me?
So Pecky joins us, and we wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matt and Air on air, weekday mornings at 11.
He's on the Ad Council.
Look, I am so proud of the race we ran and the way we ran it. And the way we ran it, over the 107 days of this campaign, we have been intentional about building community and building coalitions, bringing people together from every walk of life and background, united
by love of country, with enthusiasm and joy in our fight for America's future.
Thank you, Madam Vice President. We are still here. We've got all our life to live. We've got all our love to give. We will survive. Christopher, who said citizens across this country, our courts, members of the press, those serving in our federal, state, and local governments must now be the guardrails of democracy?
Click and clack.
No. The aforementioned Liz Cheney. Oh. We thank you for your service.
Yes.
Scat now. All right.
Be gone. We are done with you.
We don't agree with you on anything else. Okay. couple more love letters just because let's all lift each other up. Steph, Chris, Jody, everybody. This is from Susie. I really needed you guys this morning. I barely slept as well. I was not doing well psychologically. As soon as I heard your voices, I felt better. I was able to start picking myself up, and I felt okay again. Steph, thanks for bringing up the fact that people have had thoughts, dark, bad thoughts, because I was there as well. Only briefly, but still, when you brought up the subject, I felt less alone. I appreciate you guys so much. And Chris, I don't care if you're right or wrong, up or down. To me, you all are perfect. Even Chris. Thank you all again, and much love from Florida. Okay.
Yeah, I get a half-hearted endorsement.
Dana, it is so important, you know, to lift people up, to just reach out to, you know, everybody you know. And so let's talk about Blake from Utah said, Mama, this nation has decided to move forward with a convicted felon, adjudicated rapist, criminal as their president. As angry as I want to be, I honest to God knew this was going to happen. I called it back in the summer when they started forcing President Biden out of the race. I told my friends if he was forced out, we would lose in November. And I hate to say it, I was right. Giving Harris just 4 months to run a campaign for president was just mean and cruel. I think she did great. Probably would have won had she had time to put together a real presidential campaign. I hope you're doing okay. I wish I could give you a hug as we begin this long national nightmare. These are all the stories in the headlines, right? Democratic finger pointing begins after brutal election night. You know, Chris and I talked a little yesterday, Dana, that, you know, we were saying Lawrence O'Donnell said that just historically it is suicidal to replace your candidate at this point. That being said, I don't see how she could have done a better job.
I don't either.
But you're right. Barack Obama had a year and a half to build what he built. And you know, so, but we were saying, and someone else said, oh, she should have separated herself from Biden more. And it's like, can you imagine how that would have played with the Democratic base? If she's like, oh, yeah, he sucks. I'm going to be completely different. I mean, she really couldn't win, could she? I mean, she and also he has a historically successful record. And so the fact that he had a low approval rating, to me, says everything about the media and how they both sides do it. And they just, you know, but yeah.
I know this may not be a popular opinion, but you just read an email from someone from Utah. There were two states that did not start to veer more toward Trump. One of them was Colorado. The other one was Utah. Utah held steady. Hmm. I went just read an article, and the Latter-day Saints actually did not vote more for Trump because a lot of them were turned off by his morals, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, his character. So I think we need to stop the finger pointing for sure and really talk to the people in those states of what did they do right. We have 2 years, assuming there's a midterm, we have 2 years to build a coalition. There's going to be buyer's remorse. People are going to look for someone to help them. There's going to be buyer's remorse. His promises are not going to reach those people. We cannot look at them and be like, I told you
it's
so.
Not some people are blaming Biden for not getting out earlier. Some people are blaming the Democrats for all they're pushing about, or the media for pushing about, or the, you know.
But we really can't name call the Trump supporters. They're going to go push the other way. We have to reach out to them and show them there is a place in this party, and the things that they feel upset about, we can actually help them with. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't reach them this time, because I do believe she had policies that would have. The $25,000 with the first home and all the other things that she was doing to really help the lower and middle classes, really help them.
Yeah, Medicare for home care for elders, that would have made a huge difference in my family. Yeah. Just reading from this piece, the single biggest contributing factor to the GOP victories may have been high consumer prices. So I've said too, I think Biden would have suffered the same fate probably because of ageism and this administration, the price of milk's too high or whatever. Democrats ran a proposal seeking to lower costs, including a ban on price gouging. Thank you. That's what I said. She's the only one that had actual policies. Donald Trump's will make prices go up. Didn't get through. You said in the end, Americans largely voted with their pocketbook in rejecting Biden's administration. So, again, would have happened to him or Kamala, I think, including Harris. Right. This is, they're saying, who made almost no effort to separate from herself from his brand. How is she going to do that? Senator Coons said that, noted that Democrats face headwinds resulting from the COVID years that busted other incumbents around the globe. I think there's a populist and anti-incumbent wave because of the impact of the pandemic and recovery. But the progressive wing of the party argued that Democrats should have hugged the left more in terms of policy and tactics instead of making appeals to disaffected Republicans, including Liz Cheney. So now you're going to have this, you know, fight between both factions of the. But I mean, I also think that is true, that this was worldwide. But I, right. I think what's frustrating to us, Dana, it was his response to COVID that made it so bad here.
That's the thing, is that I don't know how we can reach the other side to say the price gouging started during COVID. And a lot of these companies are billionaires. They're Trump donors, and they're gouging prices. And it's not surprising that they raised them during the last couple of years of this administration to make it appear like the Biden administration is the one that wasn't doing their job with price gouging.
Right.
And now, yeah, groceries are probably going to go down because these giant companies just made a ton of money because Trump is the president-elect.
Yeah. So let me put this. So this is in this article, just so you have the people, you know, obviously the left or wing of the Democratic Party saying the leaders in Congress like the Squad have shown us another way of doing politics is possible and represent the promise of uniting our fractured nation and represent the promise of unifying our fractured nation into a multiracial democracy where everyone thrives and no one is left behind. On the other side, Claire McCaskill said, I think we need to start saying out loud, what's the difference between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? One's a woman of color, the other's a white man that everybody was really comfortable with, that were moderates and knew him well and had known him for decades. Simone Sanders, former Biden advisor, lamented the way Democrats pushed Biden out of the race after his debate. She also complained about his absence on the campaign trail, particularly in his home state of Pennsylvania. And then people on the other side are like, oh, his gaffes and his unpopularity. He shouldn't have been out there at all. And the garbage thing hurt or whatever. Just to finish, he says, it's probably not the best idea that Democrats orchestrated a very public stab fest, a proverbial stabbing in front of the sitting president of the United States, and then didn't use him in his hometown of Scranton. Biden did campaign in Scranton late in the race, but he had a limited role in aiding Harris's campaign, largely due to his low approval numbers and fear of making matters even worse for the vice president. But Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan said, I don't think there's any candidate, no matter when they started. It doesn't matter who came in. The right choice was putting in Kamala Harris, and they did. These numbers would be exponentially worse if Joe Biden was the candidate. So some of this Monday morning quarterbacking is necessary, and some of it is useless.
100%.
The coulda, shoulda, woulda is, you know, different than the larger picture, right?
Yeah, and I think now it comes down to the fact of, like, how much control are we going to have over this? Like, how long is this going to hurt us? Like, we know that there's going to be two resignations in the Supreme Court in the next 4 years. He's going to put in, you know, infant Supreme Court justices that they're going to be there for the rest of our lives. We know this is going to happen. So there's certain things we cannot control at this point.
It's going to be those babies playing paddle tennis in the commercial.
Yeah. We know this is going to happen at this point. But we still have control. And I still go back to, and I have to laugh about it, because there are places that don't have elections anymore because they're under fascism. So I don't really know what's going to happen in the future. But let's just assume we are going to have elections. We can get the House and the Senate back. We can make him a lame duck president for the next 2 years. And then we build a coalition to beat the hell out of J.D. Vance in the next election, because you know he's going to run.
Yeah.
You know he's going to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trump can't run again.
Yeah.
Under this Constitution, the way it is now, I have to keep laughing because otherwise I'll go crazy.
Yeah.
But he cannot and will not run again. And so what are we going to do to beat the next person that is going to be running? And it's going to be J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be Peter Thiel or Elon Musk, but they're all the same person with a different name.
Or the two babies from the paddle.
Or the paddle. Or the, what or is the, it? Oh, that.
Not, yeah. not
pickleball?
Pickleball commercial. That's it. Okay. New York Times writes, America hires a strong man. There was a conquering of the nation, not by force, but with a permission slip. Now America stands on the precipice of an authoritarian style governance never before seen in its 248-year history. We could have used a little help sooner, New York Times, but thank you for the warning.
Yeah.
Now a warning. Now a warning.
Now a warning.
Donald Trump told Americans exactly what he planned to do. He would use military force against his political opponents. He would fire thousands of career public servants. He would deport millions of immigrants in military-style roundups. He would crush the independence of the Department of Justice, use government to push public health conspiracies, and abandon America's allies abroad. He would turn the government into a tool of his own grievances, a way to punish his critics and richly reward his supporters. He would be a dictator if only on day one. And when asked to give him the power to do all of that, the voters said yes. I mean, it is still sometimes, I think part of it is we're still wrapping our head around it, right? It is only day one, right?
And I also think that people aren't thinking about the future. And this has been historically true in our country. People don't think about the Supreme Court on the other side. They just don't. And so they're thinking about themselves right then. You know, I will say this. We have to stop using language like every Trump supporter is a racist, transphobic, horrible human being. I was shocked when, you know, that little Facebook thing where people put a red heart or a blue heart and no arguments. They just sort of put who they were voting for. There were people from high school where I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Why? And I want to ask them why. I know they're not homophobic. I know they're not transphobic or racist. I know they're not. So something made them vote for him. Can we find that messaging and convince them that we are the better party to give them what they are asking for?
Yeah.
That's what we need to figure out.
I mean, some of this in the Times, Dana, is to your point. We just talked about COVID. They said, yep, the electoral climate was ripe for Mr. Trump, though he had a hand in creating the weather. In the wake of the pandemic, which critics said his administration badly mismanaged, the country grew more skeptical of government in general.
Right.
The fact is, he was effing running it.
Right? Yep.
Trust in the media, science, medicine, the judicial system, other mainstay institutions of American life plunged as more voters embraced the doubts Mr. Trump had sown for years. I think that, in a nutshell, that's it. It's this whole bro thing. It's the whole, you know, disinformation universe of Joe Rogan.
Awful.
That's exactly right. Ironically, it's because he ran the government so badly, he broke people's trust in government and in any
100%.
Institution.
When you have 75 million people write in Hoctua on their ballot for president because they think it's funny, we live in an age of social media. We live in an age of technology. This is what we live in now. If we don't figure out how to actually use this to our advantage, we are going to continue to make the same mistakes. These kids, some of them are lost, and these bros that think that, you know, God, I hate his name, podcaster guy, you just said it.
Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan, like these guys, and it's this rape culture that's coming out now on Twitter.
Yeah.
Your body, my choice. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mentioned that. Nick Fuentes.
And he's gay, isn't he?
Nick
Fuentes? I'm not sure.
Well, I'll take that.
Call us surprised if he's not.
One of his own followers said he was gay. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Just quickly, a couple more things in the Times. Just unleashing to this same point, unleashing a fire hose of insults and conspiracies. Mr. Trump gambled that a nation unmoored by a deadly pandemic and soaring inflation and deeply dissatisfied with the incumbent who had defeated him would be ready to re-embrace him as a blunt-speaking, menacing strongman who would fix it. That is right on. But just, he wooed black and Latino voters with false claims that migrants were stealing their jobs and were responsible for a wave of violent crime. Again, it's the lies, it's the lies, it's the lies. Whether it's about trans people or illegals or Mr. Trump uttered the kind of insults about Ms. Harris and other prominent female politicians that were once unthinkable to say in public life, to your point about bro culture. And he ended the race by insulting Puerto Rican voters his campaign had spent months trying to woo. When asked about his most divisive plans, like his wide-scale deportations, radical reassessment of American commitment to NATO, many of his voters shrugged, saying they doubted such extreme members would ever come to fruition. Yet whether Americans, even some of those who voted for him, will like the reality of Mr. Trump's plans remains to be seen. In that way, let's hope he's as awful as he says he's going to be. Throughout the campaign, economists said his policies would raise inflation, increase costs for families by thousands of dollars annually, and spark global trade wars. His promise to empower public health officials who oppose vaccines could spark national outbreaks of disease not seen in decades. His plan to deport millions of undocumented immigrants could cost taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars. What is clear in the end is that Americans wanted change, and now they will surely get it.
Yeah.
I mean, God help us.
I honestly worry about the our brown community and these MAGAs who live next to them who think they're a citizen brigade, that they can't tell whether or not they're citizens or not. They just assume they're not because they're brown. Are these people going to be hurt, you know, by their own communities because they just assume that they're illegal immigrants or they just assume that they don't have papers? Like, that's what I'm worried about. And listen, I'm confused as anyone about the shift from the you know, Hispanic vote, male Hispanic vote to Trump. But we have to remember that that vote is only 17% of the electorate. It is white men and women that voted in numbers from him, for him, that would have wiped that out. Like, that is a small percentage considering the electorate of white men and white women that still voted and backed Trump.
Dana, the people that voted on Gaza have succeeded now. The complete genocide of the people in Palestine is what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
Yes, Christopher?
Nick Fuentes identifies as involuntarily celibate or incel.
Okay.
Oh, completely un-able.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There you go. No man or woman wants to sleep with him.
We have common ground already. And somewhere to move forward. Okay.
My little incel. Is that what I'm supposed to start calling you?
50 minutes after the hour of this portion of the show, brought to you by my only sanctuary, Bonnie and Clyde. They're like my pillows and my everything. They're my just... all night long, and I love them so much. I would not feed them anything but superfoods. Why? Because that's what I eat, and they're not like my children. They are my children.
No Fruit Loops for them.
I am a childless dog lady for Kamala. No Fruit Loops for them. That's what a lot of commercial dog food is, Chris. In fact, a lot of commercial dog food is made by the same companies that make candy bars.
That's right.
What the hell do they know?
I don't know.
About taking care of your furry children. Dr. Marty knows. He's a world-renowned veterinarian. He has been called the miracle worker by Forbes magazine. That's who you want making your dog food. It's made of all superfoods. Turkey, beef, duck, salmon, antioxidant-rich fruits and vegetables. Raw, freeze-dried, all the nutrients, all the flavor, all packed in there. Right now, I can save you 54% off Nature's Blend. Get a free bag of Cod Krispies. They're wild-caught cod skin treats. Go to drmartypets.com/Miller or text Miller to 511-511.
Oh, my God!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
In November, the American people will make a choice. We hope that they will make smart choices. There is a smart choice you can make for your phone service, Credo Mobile. Credo Mobile is a progressive phone company. Every month, Credo donates tens of thousands of dollars to progressive nonprofits that work for a better world, like Friends of the Earth, March for Our Lives, Reproductive Freedom for All, over $95 million over the years. When you join Credo Mobile, you get all you want from a phone company. You get the nation's largest, most reliable network, competitive plans, and great deals on new phones. Why would a progressive choose anyone else? Switching to Credo Mobile is a smart and easy choice. You bring your current phone and your current number. Just go to credomobile.com. And for Stephanie Miller listeners, you get 25% off your service for 2 years if you use that code STEPH25. Learn more at credomobile.com. That is credomobile.com. They're the OG sexy liberal company, credomobile.com. Don't forget, type in that code STEPH25. Well, with the holidays approaching, I have found the perfect gift to make your loved ones feel special. Cozy Earth. This year, I'm wrapping my family in ultimate comfort. Here's why you should, too. A peaceful night starts with the right sheets. Cozy Earth's bamboo sheet set is the ultimate gift, offering everyday luxury everyone will love. It's the gift of unparalleled comfort, making every night a serene escape. For holiday pajamas, Cozy Earth's women's bamboo pajama set and men's pajamas are must-haves. They're stylish, super soft, perfect for cozy mornings or lazy evenings by the fire. What sets Cozy Earth apart? Their temperature-regulating fabrics keep you cool and cozy. Plus, they offer a 10-year warranty, so these gifts will last for many holidays to come. Wrap the ones you love in luxury with Cozy Earth. Head on over to CozyEarth.com/Stephanie. Use my code Stephanie for up to 40% off. That's right, up to 40% off. How amazing is that? Just go to CozyEarth.com/Stephanie. If you get a post-purchase survey, say you heard about Cozy Earth from Stephanie Miller.
When you're having computer problems, you need a company you trust to get things working again, quickly and affordably. Madison Computer Works has been doing that for business and residential customers for decades. Our computer care plans take away the hassle of being without your computer or needing to bring it in for repair. Starting at only $10 a month, our local and friendly techs provide remote help and can fix most problems in just minutes. Call 608-231-8000 and sign up today. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this. Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
The right-wing nut pastor named Joel Webbin.
What God's word says is be quiet.
I think the 19th Amendment should be repealed.
Hashtag me too. All you have to do is publicly execute a few women who have lied.
What? Let's dissuade women from reporting rapes by putting them to death.
Only a few women. Preferably the really loud ones.
With hey, makeup. Do I rate?
You absolutely... I was going to get there.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Brady joining us live via phone.
I tell the guys before every game, and honestly try to do it before every practice, challenge is going to come. This team is not just going to show up and allow us to walk all over them and win. Really what matters is how are we going to respond to that? And if you can adapt and use it as a learning opportunity, it's going to set you up to go accomplish darn near anything you want to.
I think there are a lot of people that need to hear that message today.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Stephanie Miller.
A fundamental principle of American democracy is that when we lose an election, we accept the results. That principle, as much as any other, distinguishes democracy from monarchy or tyranny. And anyone who seeks the public trust must honor it. At the same time, in our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States.
Thank you. To that point, Letitia James, New York Attorney General, yesterday.
We've created contingency plans. So no matter what the next administration throws at us, we're ready. We're ready to respond to their attacks. We're ready to respond to any attempts to cut or eliminate any funding to the great state of New York, as the governor outlined. So despite what has happened on the national stage, we will continue to stand tall in the face of injustice, revenge, or retribution.
Thank you. Thank you and thank you. We have quite a discussion with Glenn Kirshner tomorrow. Judge in New York's criminal case considering tossing his felony convictions after victory, the path ahead for Trump's legal cases. I mean, it is a sad day for justice in America, but we shall soldier on. I mean, Dana, to your point about bullying before we go, these two headlines, Barack and Michelle Obama urge all Americans to extend good faith and grace to each other after Trump win. This headline, you people suck. Bannon vows DOJ and FBI will pay the price when Trump retakes office. Any thoughts on how we try to...
I think, honestly, and I don't mean to doomsday, I know we're supposed to make people feel better, but honestly, I know Trump is evil. I think he's sick. I think he's racist. I don't necessarily think he's as evil as Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance, Elon Musk. And so, unfortunately, though, this man is now bought and paid for by all of these people surrounding him. They literally funded the campaign. So now he is beholden to them. So what they say is going to go. So I'm not necessarily worried about Trump's policies. It's all the people he's now surrounded himself. Yeah. There's no guardrails. Right. There's no guardrails. I mean, this is the first time, and I can say this, that I don't want anything bad to happen to him because I don't want President Vance and Vice President Mike Johnson, for God's sake. Right?
All right. Please support. This is who we lift up, Dana Goldberg, yes. DG Comedy.
I didn't know we were done. And I love you all.
We love you too, Dana. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.
A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media's own Stuart J. Waddles, who we'll talk movies with, and he'll help make our popcorn pick of the week. Then Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins the fun.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.